This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris with a musical to-do list. It's a new book called 1,000 Recordings to Hear Before You Die. The author is Tom Moon, one of our regular music commentators. It's a big, fat book, about 900 pages. From Marian Anderson to ZZ Top, the book covers all genres and is driven by what Moon calls the notion that the more you love music, the more music you love. Tom says 1,000 was not an easy number to settle on.
It was very hard because I didn't want to have a standard criteria, but almost everything had to hit me on like the pleasure level. It had to be pleasurable music. It had to be beautiful. It had to be moving. And that helped clarify the list a little bit.
It would be almost impossible to do justice to all the music listed in this book in the time we have on this show, so we asked Tom to help us put together a playlist of songs that represent a late summer soundtrack, the kind of thing you'd listen to during those last backyard barbecues or during the waning days at the beach. And the first song that Tom suggested is Poinciana, a classic jazz cut from Ahmad Jamal. This was recorded live in 1958.
Ahmad Jamal is one of the great Zen masters of jazz piano. He plays just what is needed and nothing more. Every phrase is perfect. Miles Davis was a huge fan after this record, Live at the Pershing, became a hit. It was actually on the charts for 107 weeks. And I love this as a summer record, too, because it shows the power of music. This was actually recorded in January in a club in Chicago. So they have this open, sauntering vibe, and they're probably freezing when they finish the set.
Now, I want to include an album that for many people was the soundtrack of summer in 1969. The album Stand by Sly and the Family Stone. An amazing achievement here because 7 of the 9 cuts were all hit singles.
And like all of Sly's singles, they all feel like summer. They have that radiant sense of urgency to them. It's like he's taken the basic workings of Motown and amped them up about 10 notches. The band is on fire. These guys really captured the spirit of summer music, I think.
Now, we could choose almost any track on this album, but what, to your mind, is the standout cut?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I like I Want to Take You Higher because it just throbs. It feels like you're looking at the pavement and it's just vibrating and you're feeling the steam rising off of it. Beat is getting
fantastic horn section.
Everything. And it has the thing that so many of the great singles did from Sly, which is that everybody gets a turn as the lead vocalist. And they just sort of go around robin and get the great bass voice. You get all the different personalities that made up that band. And, you know, when you think about pop music at that time, it was about different personalities. And you really felt like you were looking at an aggregate of people that were individuals and worked together. And that's a great thing. And they were so unified. God, what a band.
Now, Tom, our next choice may be obvious. I was thinking about Vivaldi's Four Seasons.
Yeah. It's obviously a classic. There's a section devoted to each of the four seasons. And when played the way it's played by Janine Jansen, the violinist, and a small chamber group, each of the seasons is really completely nailed. They really get inside what it means to be in that thick of summer. And summer is my favorite part of this piece because it does feel like August, and it does feel very thick, and it starts off in a very slow mood, and it becomes more playful as it goes along. But you've sensed that when these guys recorded this, they were thinking almost heat, humidity, that thing you just can't escape even if you're in air conditioning.
Tom, it would seem just wrong if we put together a late summer playlist and we did not include Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, he's one of those people, and his record, Born to Run, is one of those records where no matter what time of year you put it on, it sort of brings you back into that thing where you're out on a summer night and you can do anything.
With a cool of graces and a sea. Places that no can fill.
I think, you know, as we approach the end of summer, I always get that thing of, oh, I've got to grab onto every minute of this great weather and this inspiring air. And then I realize that it's inside these records. One great thing about this project has been the ability to go back and rediscover and learn more about records I thought I knew well. And the Born to Run story is a good one like that, because there was a documentary that was packaged with the 30th anniversary edition of Born to Run called Wings for Wheels. And in that, Bruce talks about what his conception was for this record. And it totally makes sense. He says, Born to Run has that feeling of that one endless summer night. That's what the whole record feels like. It could all be taking place in the course of one evening in all these different locations, all these different stories on one sort of long summer night.
Whoa, she's the one. She's the one.
Tom, it's been great to talk music with you. Thanks so much and congratulations on the book.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Moon. His book is called 1,000 Recordings to Hear Before You Die, A Listener's Life List. You can read and hear more essential summer songs from his book at the music section of NPR.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today's Last Word in Business is about something else that may have been recycled. An arrangement of the national anthem, as it's been played at the Olympics when Americans win the gold. Peter Briner was not watching the games until his friends started calling to say that sounds like your arrangement, which it does, especially the Rockets' Red Glare section, an unusually soft string rendition that brought some controversy when it was used in Athens in 2004. Briner got paid for that rendition in 2004. Now he says he is 100% positive that the Chinese borrowed it. In an email to the Washington Post, the Chinese insist they came up with the arrangement themselves. Hands over your hearts, please. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
The Old 97s are a band that's been pigeonholed as alt-country. I'm assured that that is rock with a country twang. Our critic Robert Christgau says the band has always been more than that, and he thinks the Old 97s have just put out their best album in years.
There is a white-hot sun and a big blue sea.
There have been four and only four Old 97s since the band formed in 1993.
Murray Hammond on bass, Philip Peoples on drums, Ken Bethia on guitar, and most important, Rhett Miller on guitar and lead vocals. They've married and had kids. They've scattered to New York and California. Miller has made two solo albums. But the old 97s remain a band, a remarkably loyal and stable one, and they love to tour. And I will ride. I will grow impatient for your love, but you will not recognize how I might die inside unless I ride. At the turn of the decade, the old 97s peaked with two indelible albums, Fight Songs in 1999 and Satellite Rides in 2001. After that, they slackened slightly, but their new one is noticeably more taut and focused, more delicate too. It's called Blame It on Gravity. No baby I, no baby I, no baby I, don't want to see you hurt, you got them tears. They fall like pearls. Blame it on gravity, yeah. Blame it on being a girl. That song, No Baby I, worries me a little. In addition to the differences between us line you just heard, which Rhett Miller ultimately repeats three times, it throws out other images of dissolution and separation, like the Reaper left at 7:30, took off in a taxi with a blonde. When I interviewed Miller a few years ago, we talked about how tricky it is to maintain a band and a marriage at the same time. Miller was smart about this endemic problem, but he didn't seem to have any answers beyond the usual keeping at it. And so I wonder whether, as with so many songwriters before him, personal pain has picked up his game. Here he describes a Caribbean vacation. But whose? Assume for a moment that his wife is the girl with the flip-flop smile. And ask yourself who the I singing the lyric is. He takes your hand tenderly and he whispers, sweet surrender, nothing is how he feels about girls like you with your flip-flop smiles and your big blue eyes on vacation. Dance with me into the ocean, roll with me into the sea. Don't tell me the world is in trouble. Do you want to dance with me? I'm not in the gossip business, and though I'm curious, I'm not about to call up this guy I barely know and ask how his marriage is going. In these post-Tin Pan Alley days, most good songwriters play with the first person, so it's impossible to know what's life and what's art. That's part of the power of the form. So let's go out on yet another ambiguous love song, The Easy Way. The one thing it proves for certain is that the old 97s really want to be a band. Two times shame on you exponentially.
Fool me again, baby, you can say shame on me. The latest album from the old 97s is called Blame It on Gravity. Our reviewer, Robert Christgau, writes the Consumer Guide to Music at MSN.com. I'm speaking of
love. What will you do when this is... You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
If they had an Olympic medal for long-distance chamber music, the gold would surely go to the Beaux-Arts Trio. After a 53-year run, the ensemble, made up of one piano, one violin, and one cello, takes the stage tonight at the Tanglewood Festival in Massachusetts to give its final U.S. performance before quitting. NPR's Tom Heisinger has this appreciation.
There is something Olympian about the Beaux-Arts Trio. The group performed at the 1988 Summer Olympics in Seoul, South Korea. Just one of thousands of venues the ensemble has played over the last five decades. But it's fitting that the Beaux-Arts Trio is returning to Tanglewood tonight, because that's where it all began. The group gave its very first public concert there on July 13, 1955. And for 53 years, one member of the trio has remained constant, pianist Menachem Pressler. He's 84 now, but still vividly recalls how that first concert launched a career for three separate musicians, who quickly grew into a single musical unit.
Immediately after the debut, we got 70 concerts, mostly in small towns, high school auditoriums. And so it really became a trip where we tried everything out and became actually a trio.
The Beaux-Arts Trio was, at that time, Menachem Pressler piano, Daniel Gillet violin, and Bernard Greenhouse cello. Barnstorming across America, making a case for chamber music wasn't easy. Rock and roll had just exploded onto the music scene, and some people didn't even know what a piano trio was. In one concert hall, the trio found the piano tucked away inside the orchestra pit. A few muscular audience members hoisted the instrument to the stage, but dropped it, and the pedal snapped off. Rather than cancel, Pressler played the busted piano anyway. Little by little, he told Performance Today host Fred Child, all the hard work paid off.
The people in these little towns enjoyed it. They said, you know, chamber music isn't that bad. And so somehow they started to like it.
And they continued to like what they heard for decades, not only in little towns, but in the world's big cities and on classical record labels. There were piano trios before Beaux-Arts, but none had the staying power, and none set the bar for the trio repertoire as high.
It's largely a remarkable testament to one man, to Menachem Pressler, and his ability to reinvent himself as an artist and to reinvent the group around him as an artistic entity.
Pressler had to reimagine the group, Joshua Cosman, music critic of the San Francisco Chronicle, says, because over the decades, five violinists and three cellists filtered through the Beaux-Arts Trio. But with each new player, Pressler always made the sound glow like a smoothly polished pearl.
It was almost like a piece of sand that got introduced into the interior of an oyster. So that there was this grittiness for a while and a sense of provocation and urgency as the players got used to one another, and then the rough spots and the abrasions would wear away. And so one way or another, they take the new elements in and work it around so that everything is smoothly integrated in the end.
Menachem Pressler's lust for life and music and his jovial attitude belie the troubles in his past. He grew up in Nazi Germany, and many of his relatives didn't survive the Holocaust. As a teenager, he didn't know all the facts as they unfolded, but he felt it.
You felt a fear that you didn't really know what it was that pressed on your chest or so. It's no pleasure to think back to it.
But Pressler had some luck. He and his parents got out of Germany just in time. In 1939, they left for a supposed vacation, and somehow the German border guards let them cross into Italy. There, they caught one of the last boats from Trieste to what was then Palestine, before Italy joined the war as Germany's ally. With millions of musical notes behind him and the end of his beloved Beaux-Arts Trio before him, Pressler is not ready to retire. And neither are his two trio mates. The young violinist Daniel Hope's career is skyrocketing so quickly now, he doesn't have time for the trio. And veteran cellist Antonio Meneses is in demand around the world as a soloist. But it is time to say goodbye. Backstage in San Francisco, as the final U.S. tour winds down, Pressler, always the patriarch, sends his bandmates off on a sentimental note.
I wanted to say that I have loved you, and I understand that you are going now for your careers where you have all my heart and all my wishes to both of you, that you do get the career that you both deserve, the big one, because you deserve it as musician and as people.
Thank you.
Pressler, Hope, and Meneses will keep on making music, just not as the Beaux-Arts Trio. Fortunately, after tonight's final Tanglewood performance, we've got 5 decades worth of recordings and memories. Tom Heisinger, NPR News.
you can hear the group's final U.S. concert webcast live from Tanglewood tonight at NPR.org. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montagne.